You're listening to the Pinto and White Shadow Show on KFGO.com and 740thefan.com.
First name greatest, like a sprained ankle, boy, ain't nothing to play with. Started off local, but thanks to all the haters, I know.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 041 podcast of the Pinto and White Shadow Show here on KFGO.com. You can find us on iTunes as well. Us being Daniel Gunnarsson, that is me, and Brad Jones, that is co-host.
Me. That is me.
The White Shadow, Brad Jones, Pinto, Daniel Gunnarsson. You can find us on Twitter at PintoKFGO for me. You can find Brad Jones
at the Bison Guy.
You can find us on Facebook, or at least I post these on Facebook, and then you can comment there on the podcast or leave a comment on the comment section of KFGO.com or, of course, subscribe to us on iTunes. I opened up with Drake and the song Forever because Toronto's out. The Raptors are out, and it was a sad sad day for me. Yesterday, we're recording this on a Monday. It was Sunday, May 4th, 2014, about 3 o'clock Central. About 5 minutes beforehand, Kyle Lowry gets the ball down one with about 6.2 seconds to go, goes into the paint, and Paul Pierce defends it well.
Somehow hops out of his wheelchair and makes the block.
Kyle Lowry is all of 5'11 or whatever how tall he is. He's not that big, so I guess I wasn't totally surprised. But it's a it was sad. I tend to, now since I've been in this position as a quote unquote journalist,
heavy on the quotes.
Yes. Here at KFGO, I've tended to put myself out of the fan shoes. You know, when it comes to local teams, I try to take myself out of realm. When it comes to NDSU and the Vikings and the Twins to a certain extent. But, you know, the Raptors, I can be a full-on fan. You know, I can wear Toronto garb. I can cheer for them. I can have a great time. And it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
You often wear the Canadian tuxedo, the jeans and jean jacket quite often.
It's a solid representation of Toronto. And yesterday hurt. And I started thinking about, why do I do this? Why do I become a fan of teams? Because I was depressed. I was upset. I was sad. We had a little bit of softball practice yesterday, and it was after the game, and I watched the game in its entirety, and I was driving there, and I'm just like, I'm silent. I usually have something on the radio or music playing. I just didn't want anything on because I'm going, man, that stinks. We'll get into it more once we get later in the podcast because we have a lot of stuff to get to here. But why? I mean, there's been studies done out there, and I find them kind of funny. And oftentimes I go, well, that's not true. But I felt that studies out there that say fans physically will get ill sometimes when teams will lose. And they've done studies where they've taken blood pressure of fans after a loss or after a win, and their moods and different things like that.
There's so much invested in it. And I get a lot of grief from friends of mine who say that I'm just a front runner, that I just cheer for teams that are good. And it's not that I cheer for really teams as much. I enjoy seeing greatness. And, I want to see
those.
Well,
you look in the mirror every day, so that would be.
Wow. I thought you'd go with, well, you look across the mic every week and see.
Oh, no.
I thought that's where you were going to go with
that. No, not yet.
Okay, not yet. Okay. I grew up big fan of all the Minnesota teams, and I've kind of become a little bit more distant. And some of that, I think, was, again, going through school and journalism and getting away from that. But the fans would argue, well, it only feels great when it hurts. You only feel the really high highs when they win. If you feel those lows too, they go hand in hand. You can't just have one without the other. So
I get that, and it's one of those things that been a Toronto fan for many years since I can just growing up. I was a Michael Jordan fan, but that was kind of at the end of his career when I was getting to a point where I really.
Yeah, you
fully
came right in with the Vince Carter in that era, which was a lot of fun. Those Raptors teams were really entertaining. David Stoudemire, Antonio Davis.
Yes, a lot of fun with those teams.
Mo
Doug
Pete.
Christie, Mo Pete. So it hurt yesterday. Fandom, sometimes I wonder. But yeah, it doesn't hurt so much when the Cowboys lose because I've just become used to it, numb at this point. But the Raptors, that was a fun season.
Yeah.
And we talked about it as well, and I'll give my reasons as to why I wasn't so much shocked at the loss as I was saddened. Sure. we'll get into more of that later. Yeah. So that's my little bit of a
you feel
sesh.
Better?
Yeah.
By the way, any specific music or type of music you listen to when going to play softball? Although this is your first year.
This is my first year. You know, softball-wise, I'd probably go... there's a band out there called Airborne.
Okay.
They sound a little bit like AC/DC, but they're good. They got some titles in there.
Okay.
Hollywood Undead, which is a very hardcore, like, rap rock group.
Okay.
But these are songs that they'll get me pumped
That's
up.
That's what it is?
Yeah, okay. Stuff like that. What is yours like what?
I play the same song every single time on my way. I'm not an overly superstitious person except when it comes to baseball, softball, and to a lesser extent basketball.
Okay.
Then I'm very have my superstitions there. I play the same song on the way in.
Dido?
It is not Thank You by Dido, although that is a great song. No, it's Keep Their Heads Ringing by Dr. Dre. Every time.
Okay.
Every time on the way in. I'll wait until I know I'm about, because the song's about 5 minutes, so I'll wait until I'm about 3-4 minutes away from the softball park when I start the song so I can get through most of it on the way in, but I don't have to restart it. I have problems.
No,
I have problems.
I understand. I have a routine. My fiance yesterday was kind of laughing at me because I had some high socks on and I had shorts on and I've got the Under Armour long sleeve on because it was a little bit chilly. It wasn't totally warm, but it was a little bit chilly yesterday about afternoon.
Yep.
So I had the long sleeve Under Armour on, and then I had my old baseball jersey on.
Yeah.
From high school.
Yes.
And so she goes, what are you doing? You're going to practice softball. And I said, we're in
rec 4 softball.
Right, exactly.
The only reason we play rec 4 softball is because there's not a rec 5.
Exactly. There is nothing about this that is... Like, you know, we're not buying jerseys or anything like that.
Well, we do.
Well, you guys have jerseys,
our team does, yeah.
But I don't know if I'll get one. I think it'll just show up in a white or blue shirt, you know?
We get a little bit of that, too. And I'm glad that you wear your same baseball shirt because I've worn the same baseball jersey. We had, like, T-shirts for jerseys, like, my seventh grade year.
Right.
And I've worn that shirt either as a jersey or when we got new jerseys in high school underneath that jersey. Every game, 7th through 12th grade, and then every fast pitch game I've played the last 5 years, I've worn the same shirt.
Well, I see.
And, and some people will call it, quote, gross.
Right. But you wash it.
I do.
So you're fine.
A couple times a year, it's fine.
Right, okay. See, what I do is that it's not so much the T-shirt jersey. I just kind of wear that for warm-ups or whatever. I still have it laying around. But I have a... Nike dry fit shirt that I wore all through high school because we had like the basically vest jerseys and so you had to wear a blue undershirt.
Yep.
And that's what I wore for every baseball game. That is the shirt I wear for softball, anything like that. So that is the shirt and it is a dry fit, but that's the shirt. And we're getting way too into this.
Yes,
but
we are.
That is what I wear. And
off
it's superstition.
The rails. Yes. But
yes,
it's
already.
Absolutely.
8 minutes in, we're
absolutely.
Off the rails.
All
okay.
Right.
Let's get this train back on its tracks and hit up some
local.
All right. Locally, we're going to talk a little NFL draft, and this is going to be draft heavy because the draft hits us on Thursday and runs until Saturday. And, you know, this local area has some investment in it this year, finally.
Yeah.
Billy Turner, Marcus Williams, Brock Jensen to a certain extent, and maybe a handful of others. There's going to be questions, maybe not so much with Billy Turner, but with Marcus Williams and maybe to a lesser extent Brock Jensen. Are they going to get drafted?
Yes.
I think you and I can agree Brock Jensen is not going to get drafted.
Agree.
But what we can discuss here is Billy Turner and Marcus Williams.
Yes.
And where they might go in relation to what round. And, you know, I'll kick it off here from what I've been hearing, what I've been seeing, and doing a little research. You know, Billy Turner can fall anywhere between the 3rd and 6th round is what I'm seeing.
Okay.
And it, to me, is all about how much time they're going to give this guy in order to invest in him because he's not ready to play right now. And that's why you're going to see him a later round offensive lineman. The other part of it is you're taking a little bit of a stretch, although it won't be that big of a deal. Billy Turner most likely is going to have to play guard in the NFL. From all the reports and all the indications that they're saying is that he's better suited as a guard than he is as a tackle. There's a lot of nuances that go with playing offensive line and for whatever reason, he just projects better as a guard than he does as a tackle. And I couldn't tell you for the life of me why that is. It might have to do something with the speed or at least lateral quickness.
I was gonna say, that's usually what it is.
Because tackles are more apt to have to guard on pass rushers going to the outside, so they have to be able to move quicker to their left or their right or to the sides, where the guards basically kind of back up or move forward. And you got to be a better run blocker usually if you're a guard, because you got to be able to get to that second level quicker, and now I'm going down that route. But yeah. It seems to me Billy Turner, though, despite some of the shortcomings, he's got a lot of upside. That's a great word. And I do actually have an NFL draft drinking game that I found online.
Oh, there's several of those,
and,
yeah.
And it's one of those things that every time you hear, like, upside or great potential or stuff like that, take
a
drink.
Which means you are going to have a massive hangover by
yes.
Sunday.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Still thinking about participating in that thing. Okay. Oh, yeah. But anyways, Billy Turner, to me, perfect fit for, I would think, late fourth round.
Okay, so
fifth round, something like that. I'm going to put him at the fifth round. I'm going to put
you're
it down.
Fifth round. Okay.
I think
so
he's a fifth rounder.
So let's see here. Because I was trying to see if there's a way. We haven't had a wager in a while. And I was trying to see if there's something that we can come up with for a wager. The last pick of the fourth round last year was number 133.
Okay.
So you would take the over on 133.
Yes.
Okay. If I put it halfway through the fifth round, if I put it at, let's see, if I put it at 147.
That's about 14, 15 picks in there.
Right about halfway in.
I would say he's about in the middle there. So okay. I would say
so if I'm
over 147.
155.
Under.
Okay. So you say under 155.
Yeah.
I hope you're right, but I'll make that wager.
Okay.
So pick 155 as a push. If he goes earlier than that, you win. If he goes later than that, I win. Because I think that's just about right. And usually I don't do this, but I told you I was feeling goofy on the way in today, so
right.
I'm kind of taking a shot in the dark here, which usually I'm a little more, I try to be a little more.
You try to be a little bit
cautious.
More conservative.
Yeah,
yes.
A little more cautious, a little more conservative with my wagers. But
okay,
yeah.
And why, in your mind, do you see it later? Outside of it being kind of a wager, why do you see it being later?
I think it's that move. I think the fact that you're taking a guy and moving him to a different position is going to be a big part of it. I think that's the biggest thing. If he's been a guard, he's played guard, because now you're projecting a little bit. And there's been a lot of players who have been drafted on, okay, we're going to change you positions. Not all that hasn't always worked out. And there's probably more instances where it hasn't. So I think teams might be a little bit more wary on that. But he's got the skills, so and has some potential versatility. So it wouldn't surprise me if he went better than that.
Yeah, and he is an athletic guy. I mean, we've seen him. NDSU runs the ball more than I think a lot of teams now in college football. And we've seen his athleticism getting to that second level or being able to be a lead blocker on counters or tackle runs, whatever the question may be. Looking on NFL.com's draft profile, Billy Turner, they have him going projected third to fourth round.
Ooh, okay. So maybe I'm...
But again, I see a lot of people, like you said, being a little bit cautious about the position move. I also see them cautious about...
FCS.
Yes. Yeah. Well, he went to NDSU. I mean, it's NDSU. Despite all the accolades that went with him at NDSU and the club itself, you're still going to see guys go, I don't know how he's going to do against good competition. Sure, he played in the Senior Bowl, and sure, he got invited to the Combine, but we'll see. I did notice...
Honestly, here's my prediction is I'm going to be wrong on this. I really do think I am.
Yeah.
But I want to put one up on him, and we're going to put one up on Marcus Williams,
okay.
I think, too. So
he's got a YouTube show out there called Driven.
Okay.
Billy Turner does.
Yep.
And I watched it today, and one of the things he mentioned is that he went to work out, train basically for the Combine in Arizona.
Yep.
They cut 0.4 seconds off his 40 time. His last game, or close to his last game at NDSU, he ran a 4 or a 5.4. If he's around 4.5, get out.
Yeah.
He ran a 5.4 40.
And now he's running a 5.0.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So
that's impressive.
That is impressive. But again, you have to remember, a lot of these sites and where you go, they train you for the specific things that go on at the Combine. They
don't train you overall. Which is really weird.
It is, but...
Because most people agree, well, your 40 doesn't necessarily say a whole lot about you, but yet you need to make sure you do this well, and we're going to train you specifically for it, even though it may not necessarily be a football skill you're going to use.
Speaking of training and doing it well, Marcus Williams was a guy who could pick the ball off and return for interceptions very well throughout his career. Yes. FCS all-time interception return for touchdown. However, the question started to arise, I think, about his size to a point, if he was going to be able to be physical enough to play the corner position at the NFL. That was one, because he played in a cover two system, and in the NFL, even in a cover two, you have to be physical, and you have to be able to play man.
You have to be able to tackle.
And you do have to be able to tackle, and that's the second part, because there's talk of, well, maybe he can go to safety.
Okay? You really have to be able to
tackle. You really have to tackle him there.
And you have to be willing to hit.
Yes.
He doesn't appear to like that.
Two things that we never really saw with Marcus when he was at NDSU. The third part about it is his speed, and the fact that at Pro Day at NDSU, he ran his highest total was, or his highest 40 time was a 4.57. And I did a little quick Google today, and I looked through some of the higher 40s. For the combine runners cornerbacks, it was 4.4s, 4.3s, and those were the top fives. And then it starts to drop down, but you probably have a lot of people at the 4.49s, 4.5 era or area. Same with safeties, too, because I did look, and I saw some discussion moving him to safety, which I was very confused about, knowing that I've seen him play most of his career and going, he's not a safety type. Marcus Williams still, to me, is going to get looks just because his stats jump out at you much.
Okay, over, under, he gets drafted. That's not really an over, under.
No, it's
not.
Does
he get drafted, yes or no?
No.
I'm going to say yes.
Oh, really?
And this is a big departure, and again, I'm feeling a little frisky with the wagers today. The case that I can make is a simple one. With the way the NFL is going these days, on defense, what are the two positions that you need? Cornerback, pass rusher.
Right. Yep.
And you know what? Again, like you said, it's really tough to ignore the stats. And if he's got a good agent, his good agent can make a pretty strong case for him. He's faster with the football in his hands. Look at the plays that he made.
Right.
And you know what? You can't teach a nose for the ball. Some of that's just got to be in you.
Yeah.
And he's got that. And he has good anticipation on jumping routes. The tackling technique, that can be taught. That's how the agent sells it. Whether it can be, if you're not learning how to tackle with NDSU, I question how well you're going to learn to tackle anywhere else.
Right.
But that's the sell job that I would be doing if I was his agent. And I think with the premium that's put on cornerbacks, I think there's a shot. And if you're going to say no, I'll take a flyer on it. Sure.
You know, one of the things if you're talking about tackling is you look at it and go, well, he never had to tackle at NDSU.
Not a lot, but he did, and he did it poorly. I
mean, there were some out there, but you could go, well, you know, they played in the Valley, which was a very, if you talk about leagues, they didn't pass
overall,
as much.
Overall, it was more run-heavy.
More of a run-heavy. The defense was so dominant that the opportunity to tackle from a breakaway guy or a guy to the outside was rare because the linebackers were so fast
and the safeties were
so good. You know, Marcus never really had to protect the corner. Okay, I buy that, but when I watch him, he seems tentative.
Yes,
That's the thing that we noticed the most about him. When he came up to tackle, he seemed tentative. And the other thing that I'll say that you didn't mention is his special teams ability and his ability to return kicks. Now, when it comes to returning kicks, you go, well, I want a guy who can run a 4-2. Not all the time. There's guys who can run straight up the field and, oh, okay, but they can't run the ball back. Yeah. You know, Williams can. He's proven that he's a good kick returner.
And
he's very good with field vision. That's a positive. The only thing is that at what point are kick returns going to get phased out of the NFL? They're on their way there with how far up they've put up the kick returns. And
also true.
You know, so he has those intangibles, but I just think of
those are actually tangibles.
Tangibles, I should say. But I look at his speed factor to me, and I think that's going to make a lot of people very lukewarm on him and go, we're going to give him an invite, which I think he'll get. I think he'll get a camp invite no matter what and go, we'll see how he does in camp. But to take away a pick and put it on him, on a guy we're just very unsure of, you can get solid players in the sixth and fifth round. You can nowadays. It's no longer, well, we're in the seventh round. Who's left? We're in the seventh round. There's still plenty of talent out there. So, again, the depth of the draft, and I haven't done enough research on the depth of cornerback in this draft and see how deep it is. To me, I just think it might be if he is drafted at seventh round. But I agree. We'll go with it.
Yeah, why not? I'll take a shot.
Drafted, undrafted, and for Billy Turner, I said he's going to get drafted above pick 155. You said below pick 155.
Well, I say worse than one. Yeah,
well, over, yeah. If you will.
Over, under, whatever, yeah.
And 155, the push. The third guy, and I did write an article on this. If you go to KFGO.com, Pinto's points. The three guys I highlighted for NDSU, we already talked about Billy Turner and Marcus Williams, but the third being Brock Jensen. And you and I both agree that he's not going to get drafted. But what about him getting an invite to join an NFL team in camp? Do you see that happening?
I was having this conversation with a coworker of mine today. Shout out to one of our regular listeners, Mr. Z.
What up?
Here's the problem with him is purely in numbers. Because how many quarterbacks are getting a combine in or a camp invite? Five?
Right.
So you're looking at 150 quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of guys already in the league, obviously. Right. And you know how many, so there's realistically what? 50, 60 spots probably.
Rough estimate
between guys that are sitting out that are free agents that are kind of the
on the
you
fringe.
Know, they've kind of okay, they've played a little bit before, so maybe we at least give them a look, or the new guys coming in.
Yeah.
I struggled with this a lot. I'm going to say no, but I don't feel good about it.
And I'm going to say yes, that he will get an invite, and I think it's going to be locally. And here's why. The okay. Vikings.
So local, you mean Green
Vikings,
Bay?
Vikings, Green Bay okay. kind of area. The Vikings, by virtue of lack of quarterbacks on the roster, we don't know what they're going to do in the draft. If they're going to take a quarterback in the later rounds or if the right guy is going to fall to him at eight. Johnny Manziel, Blake Bortles would probably be the two that if they fell to him at eight, they have to take him. Don't think that's going to happen, but...
Well, I don't think we're even talking about draft. I think we're talking about the invite.
Well, and again, we're talking about the invite. I don't know if the Vikings draft a quarterback. That's the thing. I mean, I've said all along, it's do not draft a quarterback unless you're 100% positive this is the guy you want. Because again, I go back to Christian Ponder, and I still believe they weren't 100% positive, but felt pressure.
Yeah,
they felt pressure. So with the Vikings, you gotta be careful. Now they only have Christian Ponder and they only have Matt Castle on their roster. I think that's about it for quarterbacks. You know, they're gonna have some camp invites. To me, it would make sense that locally these guys know about Brock Jensen. It still plays a factor. It's the same thing with Green Bay. If there's four quarterbacks, they have one more to fit in. They go, well, why don't we give Jensen a shot? So locally, I see that. The other part that's going to jump out at a lot of people is that, all right, his arm isn't, you know, the best. He's not the best athletically, but man, he wins.
Yeah.
And he doesn't make mistakes. And that is, to me, something that's going to stand out. When you look at the way he plays, it's not the deep throws. It's not those things that are going to stand out to scouts and people that have watched. And they're going to go, you know, on this third and five, you didn't have anybody open. And you know what you did? You threw it away. You know what that is? That's a smart play. A lot of guys your age that have been playing college football are going to go, eh, maybe I can run it and try to get a first downer. Eh, maybe I'll try to fit it into a tight window. You know what the defense is giving you and what it's not. I think that's going to play a part to a certain extent.
The thing with that is there's a really long history of front office guys, scouts, saying, you know what? I can at least try to teach you some decision-making and things to look for. I can't teach you to throw the ball on a line 60 yards. And I, especially in the NFL today, you've got to have a really certain type of team for a guy like Brock Jensen to be successful.
Yes, you do.
And there are not that many of those teams out there. He's going to be, I think he's going to be kind of one of the fringe guys. Like I said, I don't feel real good about it. I'm saying no, but it wouldn't, again, it's another thing. None of this would surprise me. I think we've set the questions we've asked, I think, are right about on the money.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, does he get an invite? Marcus Williams, does he get drafted? And Billy Turner, where does he go?
Yep.
And again, it wouldn't shock me or surprise me if Brock Jensen didn't get a camp invite, but I think it'll get out there.
I hope so. I hope he does.
I really do too. I really would like to see him go on and have at least a solid shot at making a team to start out his pro career. Because I think if he doesn't get there, I think I think the Canadian Football League might be something he looks into, or at least some other pro league.
Something.
Something to that nature. So that's your Bison NFL draft roundup. You know, the other guys that are out there, Levon Perry would be the only other guy I can think of off the top of my head that possibly gets a look when it comes to camp. You know, otherwise, Grant Olson's not. I think he's a graduate assistant now at NDSU anyways. I don't know. He's not going to get
a shot. I
believe
I had that one.
You did.
Before that one was even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anybody else you can think of? Brian Shepherd was a senior, but I do not see him.
Ojeri.
Yeah, maybe.
Small.
Yeah, he's too small. He's not fast enough.
Yeah. I mean, otherwise, not nobody that's jumping out.
And even with running backs, you got to be really good nowadays.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to be really good, and you have to be multidimensional. You have to be able to catch the ball. You have to be able to block on the pass. And
which your jury can do.
And he can. But then you have to be able to run a 4.4 40. Yeah. And
So. I don't see it.
Yes. So we'll move on from that, and we'll see what happens. May 8th through the 10th is the NFL draft. It's 3 days, which is really stupid. But
oh no, I disagree.
Be that as it may, you like
capitalism, baby.
You like I understand
you got,
that.
If you got people willing to shell out money,
yes.
Then guess what? We'll take it, baby.
No, I get it. I still think the 2 day format was a lot better. I like that idea. Have the first couple rounds on a Friday or even a Saturday, and then finish it up on Sunday. I like that better. But now we're going Thursday, Friday, Saturday. It loses its what little panache it had. It loses a lot of it by spreading it out so much. But ESPN can really highlight that first round. So
content.
Oh, capitalism, as you said. All right, we'll move on from there, and we'll go to
regional.
With that. We're gonna do this one because I thought it was a little bit interesting, and I think I'm interesting, so that's why I put it down.
Jeez.
The Minnesota Wild are in trouble, down 2-0 to Chicago Blackhawks in the conference semifinals. Do the Wild need to take this series to 6 games in order to keep up the increasing fandom for the team? And I have noticed, and maybe you haven't, but I have noticed an increasing chatter, especially after the 7-game series. Against the Avalanche for Wild fans in this area. Do the Wild have to take this thing to 6 games to at least keep relevant in some people's minds and continue that momentum building towards next season? Or,
well, I mean, that's a real. Your answer is yes. This is a Pinto special where I know your answer just because of the way you're asking.
Right,
the question.
Exactly. Pinto special. I like that one.
Here's the thing. There's hockey. There's going to be that segment of really, really passionate fans, probably more passionate than almost anybody, than any other fans. I mean, I would say if you take the, you know, the most passionate fans of an NHL team, it may be rivals college football.
And Toronto Raptor fans.
Jeez, whatever. but
we the North.
So,
hashtag we the North. Hashtag we the North.
Oh my gosh. So from that sense, no, I don't think so. And it's, if it was a different area of the country, maybe. But Minnesotans are just so crazy about hockey. And for as majority, I mean, there's so many people that just love their hockey. I don't know that they have to win another series in order to, especially the way the first series went.
Yeah.
Dramatic win over Colorado.
Great series.
I think that's enough to kind of keep things rolling for next year.
You know, the one thing that the Wild have, and I wrote about this, they're doing it right now at the perfect time because you look at the Vikings and they're coming off an abysmal season and a quarterback situation that stinks.
Yep.
They don't really have, outside Adrian Peterson, they don't have the one guy that you look at and go, he's going to be the face of the franchise.
Yeah, they don't have no Jared Allen anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they're a little bit down. Not that they're going to lose fans because it's the Vikings, but they're a little bit down, not successful. Twins have been bad for the last 3 years, are on the fringe of being mediocre at best right now.
Exactly. They're exceeding expectations at slightly below average.
And then you have the Minnesota Timberwolves, which outside of Kevin Love are a mess. And this isn't a basketball area. Let's be honest with ourselves.
Correct.
This is not a basketball area. The Minnesota Wild right now have an opportunity, if they're successful, and to a point they have been, but even more so, to really grab those fringe sports fans in the region and go, man, it's high, and hockey is big around here.
Yes.
It is. So I look at it like that. People in this area, even kind of passive fans of hockey, go, well, I understand the game, And if the Wild are good, I can get into that.
See, here's where I would kind of disagree a little bit on that. I don't know how many passive hockey fans there are. There's just not a lot of them. With the most part right now in this country with hockey and with soccer, you're pretty much all in or all out. And so that's where I'd kind of say, I don't know that there's going to be a lot of that, buildup, because you're going to get people like me who,
right?
I'm not a hockey guy. I'm not going to be. And I said on the podcast last week or 2 weeks ago that there's no better playoff event than overtime hockey.
Last week, yeah, we talked about it.
There's nothing better than that. But at the same time, I'm just not interested. It's just not, as in watching, sitting down and watching a full game, I'm just not going to do it. And so there's just fewer of those people that are be like, oh, well, this player is playing, or this team is playing, so I at least know enough about them where I'm going to tune in. There just isn't that.
I think one of the things that hockey kind of has a downfall, and it's through no fault of their own, it's the way the system works, but you go to a 60-minute game, and you only see your favorite player out on the ice for 25, 26 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, you only see him out there for a handful of minutes, and it's quick, too. Where in basketball, you see guys play 42 of a 48-minute game.
Yeah, in the playoffs especially.
You see a football player play every snap.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's one of the downfalls of hockey is
that's true.
You get a guy like Mikael Granlund, a young guy, forward, I believe, for the Wild. He scored the game-winning goal in a 1-0 game for him. He's really kind of an up-and-coming, but you're only going to see him for 25, 24 minutes during the regular season.
Yeah.
So that's tough to me
for
a guy trying to hook onto hockey.
And another part of it, too, is, and it's the baseball problem as well.
Yeah.
Who are you marketing? Marketing teams, marketing clothing just does not work as well as it used to.
Right.
To get fringe fans, to get the casual fan.
Right.
When's the last time you saw a hockey guy on a commercial other than airing during a hockey broadcast?
Or an ESPN Sport This Is SportsCenter bit?
Yeah.
I think Sidney Crosby, maybe.
Maybe. Can you tell me what, though?
Probably a Gatorade commercial.
I mean, give us a call if you want to sponsor Gatorade.
Oh yeah, please do. Right now.
Yeah. But even then, it probably wasn't just Sidney Crosby. It was Sidney Crosby
and
Derek Jeter,
right,
and all these guys. You just don't have that. And they need to market even those This Is SportsCenter commercials. There was Ovechkin and some other Russian dude where they were spying and had the guy rappelling down from the ceiling. Hilarious. Okay, give me more of those. Let me see some of those things. I need the personalities to draw me in because I don't have the attachment to a team.
Right.
So if you don't have that attachment, you gotta bring in those and market your stars. Baseball seems unwilling to do that, although they've gotten a little bit better.
And they should continue to get better.
You know, you see Andrew McCutchen and a couple of guys like that around a little more, but you see none of it with hockey.
Yeah, it is tough. And the other problem could be to a point because we don't see it. Guys like Jose Fernandez, Yasiel Puig,
yep,
and these really talented, but they're foreign-born players. So it's a very tough connection when you're playing a sport in America to connect with that local fan base.
Yeah,
in that
that's
way.
True. And hockey has that same thing.
And
yeah,
hockey does have that
point.
Same problem as well. And these guys are stars in their own right. They're superstars, but to make that connection is tough. You have to market him in the right way. And Puig is a guy that, if you
Puig
get into that baseball, could be that guy.
If you market him the right way, yeah, he absolutely could be that guy.
Yeah, exactly. So, again, I think Brad's right. I tend to agree with him on the fact that, you know, they could win this series. But I think if they win the series being down 2-0 the way they've lost two games, it might increase it a little bit. But just getting to a 6, it's going to hit a crescendo, and then it's going to fall back down, and then they're going to play too long of a season, and then they might get in the playoffs next year, and then it's going to kind of do the same thing. I just feel there's a pretty solid opportunity for them to gain maybe some more fans. Speaking of a regional team, the Minnesota Vikings and the NFL draft, they pick number 8 in this year's NFL draft. Brad, what position... offense, defense, what have you, do you realistically see the Vikings drafting with the number 8 pick?
What do I think they'll do?
Realistically. And you can take into account how you feel maybe the first few picks are going to go, whatnot, but...
I think they're going to go quarterback.
Okay.
I don't know how much I agree with that, but I think that's what they're going to do. And look, and you kind of mentioned it, I think, when you're talking with Brock Jensen. You do it if you're sold on one of those guys.
Right.
If you bring them in, you work them out, they're there, and you say, you know what? I really see this guy being at least... You know, pick what your average quarterback is in the NFL. Whoever's, you know, if it's, you know, above Joe Flacco or whoever's at in that range. And you could make an argument that Flacco's below average. But whoever's in that range, if you think they're going to be, they got, you see all signs pointing to above that, you take him. I think that's where they're going to go. But... You're going to make the argument for defense. I can already see it in your...
Well, honestly, I realistically, how I think they'll go is defense. I think you're right.
Okay.
Just out of the fact that they do need it. They need defense, and they need help there. But, again, we talked about this before. What happens if, you know, the right guy falls to him? At number eight, you know, I have looked at these mock drafts passively here or there. A guy like Khalil Mack has come up as an outside linebacker from Buffalo. And we're not talking names, we're just talking positions.
Yep.
There's so much that you need to address on the defensive side of the ball that you can fix offensively with one quarterback. And if he falls to you at pick eight, there you go. I just don't think he's going to fall to him at pick eight. And I do mean Johnny Manziel or Blake Bortles. Okay. I think one of those two, and I don't think they're going to make it that far.
I think one of those two makes it that far.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it would be fun if Johnny Manziel did make it that far. And again,
I think Bortles will. I don't think Manziel will. I think Bortles will.
And even Blake Bortles to a point, because again, if you've seen Lindsay Duke, she'll be coming to Vikings games. So therein lies why you'd want Blake Bortles. Be that as it may... I think it'd be a lot of fun. You talk about individual personalities. I think Johnny Manziel
in
Minnesota.
Oh, he's got that in spades.
Yes, that would be a lot of fun. I would go just to see him play, and sure. I think he would get an early opportunity to play. But when it comes right down to it, the Vikings, I hope, are a lot smarter than they are desperate, and they go, yeah, we're desperate for a quarterback, a guy that can carry the franchise, can't get him at eight. Right,
here's
now.
The difference. When they drafted Ponder, they thought, you know what? We're a quarterback away. We are good enough now where if we hit that pick, I think we've got a shot. We're just coming off the Brett Favre years. I think we've got a shot to be able to keep something going here. And I think that was the process at that point. That's a very different thought process from where they are right now, where now it's, holy smokes, we need a lot of help. And I think at that point, you almost take, you have your top eight players on the board, and you take whatever the highest one that comes up, almost regardless of position. You just get players. Who do you think is the best player? And I think that's the way that Minnesota goes.
Looking at NFL.com, which has a bazillion experts.
Sure. I like Mike Mayock. I'm a big Mayock guy.
They've got, you know, Blake Bortles, Anthony Barr, C.J. Mosley, Khalil Mack, Teddy Bridgewater a couple times. Johnny Manziel has made it that far. To me, I see him going defense. I just don't see... Here are the first seven teams in front of him. Just to give you an idea, you have Houston at one, St. Louis at two, Jacksonville at three, Cleveland at four, Oakland at five, Atlanta at six, and Tampa Bay at seven. Now, of those seven teams... Texans need a quarterback. The Jaguars need a quarterback. Cleveland needs a quarterback. Oakland needs a quarterback. You could argue that Tampa Bay could use a better quarterback, but we don't know what we're going to get with, what, Mike Glennon? Maybe probably would take a quarterback, say, Johnny Manziel, if he fell that far. And then you have the factor that Houston is in the state of Texas, and it would be really tough to go, well, you know, Johnny Manziel's a Texas kid. He went to Texas A&M.
I think we put way more stock in that as media because it's easy than what teams actually do.
And I would hope they would. But then again, when you think about the type of... Oh, we got an ESPN update here. Okay. You got to take into the account the type of money you could make just by having Johnny Manziel be your poster boy in Houston.
Yeah.
And again, I know that sounds stupid, but that's a lot of money for a year or a couple of years.
You know the guy that I love listening to as far as sports radio goes,
yes,
is my boy Dan Patrick.
DP.
And he's been making that argument where if you're Jacksonville, you take Johnny Manziel because he makes you relevant. And I don't remember who it was that was on that was talking to him, who was kind of like, well, yeah, he makes you relevant in the same way that Tebow kind of made you relevant. Is it was fun for a little bit, and then you found out he wasn't very good. And if you don't win, then, I mean, that lasts for what? If all of a sudden he goes, not even, I don't think.
Not in the NFL
today.
Not in the NFL, no.
Maybe a year.
Right.
And then if he's no good, you're back in the same spot again. So you're on board with Dan Patrick's way of thinking a little bit with at least in certain situations with Jacksonville, a couple of these teams that are just so irrelevant that it gives you irrelevant a little
especially.
Bit. And
Cleveland does need help at quarterback, but you know Cleveland has talent there.
Yeah, he didn't say his two. I think Dan's two were Oakland.
Yeah,
Jacksonville.
I can see,
but
those
I just
two, yeah.
I, that way of thinking just doesn't make any sense to me. You know what? The one thing that will get you relevant, will fill the seats, is winning. Manziel will do it for a couple of weeks, but you pick the player you think is going to help you win.
So, getting back to the Vikings bit,
yeah.
Again, that's what it comes down to. And
so you think they go defense specifically?
I think they go linebacker because they need a pass rusher, and I think they can get that from, they're still going to go 4-3, if I remember right. So maybe a defensive end or an outside linebacker that can...
Give me one!
Outside linebacker!
All right!
Okay, so we've covered that. So
yes.
You think quarterback, I think outside linebacker. That'll be fun to see. All right, let's move on to
national.
A lot of things to cover here nationally because I've got some good bits written down.
Pat yourself on the back a little bit more here.
Okay.
Wait, can I give you yourself?
I've been complimenting myself on my questions and topics this whole show, so that's good to know. Let's start with the NBA and the NBA playoffs and the first round recap, and what a first round it was.
Can you remember a better first round?
Cannot.
Five game sevens?
Unbelievable.
In the first round? Are you kidding?
And nearly all of them were very competitive outside of the Dallas-San Antonio game.
Yep.
Which was not competitive at all.
Unfortunate. Even though they put up such a good fight. I love the Mavs. Dirk Nowitzki's been my favorite NBA player for... It vacillated between him and Kobe Bryant for literally the last 10 or 15 years.
Vince Carter with the big shot. What was it? Win game three, I want to say?
That sounds right. Yeah, I think it was game
three. From the corner.
Yep.
But in game sevens, and even some game sixes, Portland, Houston, if you will.
Yeah.
It was just great playoffs all around. It was so much fun to watch.
Yes.
And so much fun to look at. So let's kind of recap it. Your favorite first round series was?
Golden State Clippers.
Okay.
Golden State Clippers.
Why?
It was just, it had a little bit of everything. I mean, you had obviously scandal. If you want headlines, doesn't get any bigger or better than that as far as a media everything blowing up department.
Right.
You had two of the game's most marketable stars. Three, really, because you got Chris and the State Farm Chris and Cliff Paul spots are inescapable and really, really good. I mean, maybe not as good after the 97th time you've seen it, but they're still good spots. You've got Steph Curry, and you've got a great nickname for he and Klay Thompson, the Splash Brothers. Great nickname.
Right.
And you've got Blake Griffin, who's just a ton of fun. Then you throw in a little bit of, okay, we're going to throw in some of the college basketball spice haters with J.J. Redick in there. There were a lot of really, really cool elements to that series.
And it seemed like
it was an open series, run and gun.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it seemed like there was a lot of respect between the two teams.
Yep.
Which I really enjoyed. You're not going to get some harder players than Steph Curry. The one thing about Blake Griffin that I've noticed is he's not a lollygagger. He works his butt off.
Yes, he does.
He does. And I rather enjoy that about his game.
And the way he closed out game 7,
yeah,
those last 3-4 minutes from Blake Griffin were awesome. I mean, he just, you know, all this, he made all that noise about, all he is a dunker. He can't do anything else. That should have gone away about a year and a half ago, and it's gone now because he did it in a big spot in game 7.
my favorite series was Portland Houston.
Sure.
A lot of overtimes in that series.
Yeah.
And
a series ending buzzer beater. It's tough to.
Yeah.
When you go.
Lillard, yeah. Just unbelievable three with 0.9 seconds to go when Houston was like, yeah, we're going back to Houston. And just to do what he did down two, knocking the three for the win, just unbelievable. And Portland, there are some cities out there that I've openly said, if I ever had an opportunity to cover a team, I want to go to a city where that's all they have.
Sure.
Green Bay with their football team.
Oklahoma City.
Portland with their basketball team. And Portland's one of these very towns. It's very laid back. It's very relaxed. I've been there several times. More into their coffee shops and kind of hip-hop music. No, I'm kidding. But they're more of a hipster vibe out in Portland. But they love their basketball team. I mean, not only Portland, but the entire state. And that's fun to see that kind of passion because that's all they have. It's, oh, we got a big-time basketball team. That's fun to watch. And that was a fun series to watch. And this is still a very young team in Portland. And Houston, solid team. I mean, with Dwight Howard and James Harden and Chandler Parsons, this, for them to do what they did, that was a fun series, very competitive.
And it keeps Houston interesting.
Yes.
Because Houston wouldn't have been quite as interesting if they had won that series. They're one of those teams that, oh, what's going to happen with the coach? What are they going to do with some of these players?
Right.
They were more interesting to lose than to win. The Clippers, more interesting to win than lose.
Exactly. Although I would like to see Golden State go on, just because there's some idiots out there who are talking about Mark Jackson's job being...
There's some stuff going on there.
Being an issue, and I could... Here's what I can imagine is Mark Jackson is rubbing some people in the front office the wrong way because he's brash and very opinionated and honest.
He's rubbing the... Here's the thing, and here's what's sometimes really challenging, is we listen to Mark Jackson on TV in the best broadcasting group that there was.
Right.
With him and Mike Breen and Jeff Van Gundy. And so,
well, not was, but in recent memory.
Well, okay, one of. Yeah, I mean, recent memory. Okay, yes, thank you. So save your emails. Yes. In NBA recent memory, it's the best one they've had in a while. You know, it's, and that's, and it's hard to sometimes get past those blinders of, you know what, we really like this guy. And then you get, when you get Jeff Van Gundy calling their games, it's hard for Van Gundy to really start heaping on some criticism like he does everybody. Because he knows Mark Jackson so well. And it's the same thing. You know what? If he gets fired, I think he'll get a job tomorrow. But if you rub the owner the wrong way, man, it's tough to come back from that.
Yes, I mean, it is.
I mean, if you would just go and start being brash and opinionated with your boss, you might be very, very good. But at some point he says, you know what?
I don't need to listen to you.
I don't need to put up with this anymore. I pay you. And now I'm going to pay you to go away.
Right.
Because I can go get George Karl. Or, that's a good job that if Mark Jackson goes, there's going to be a line of people that want that job.
And I think George would be a guy that you look at and go, yeah, okay, we like offense. He likes offense. Let's do this. Makes sense. So, yeah, that would, to me, was unfortunate. The series or the team that surprised you the most? I won't say series, but the team that surprised you the most.
Atlanta. I knew that in Indiana, we obviously knew, was kind of in a tailspin. I didn't think Atlanta was good enough to give them a series.
Played them perfectly, though.
Yes, they did. Eliminator
Roy Hibbert.
Never heard of Pero Antich before, and now I love him. So I was surprised by Atlanta because they were kind of a team where, oh yeah, we don't really want to be in the playoffs. We actually would rather be in the lottery, was kind of what it seemed like coming into the series. And then they come out and give a heck of a performance in the first few games, or in the first six games, and even to a good chunk of game seven. So I'll give that one to the Hawks.
To me, it was the Wizards, and it was, you know, a lot of people, I think, overprojected, overhyped, if you will, the Chicago Bulls. They had a great regular season. They did. But then you also have to remember the regular season, they have to play their butts off just to make the playoffs. Without Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, probably an MVP-type season, although he won't get the award, but just the way he played and how well he played. But, you know, the Wizards were so good in that series. And right now they're playing a second-round series against the Pacers and have jumped out to a 13-point halftime lead already. So the Wizards, I think, are for real. With John Wall, Bradley Beal, that team with a good mixture of some veterans in there. I think they have a very good shot at making the Eastern Conference Finals with the way the Pacers are playing, which nobody really would have said prior to the first round starting. That was a team that surprised me a little bit. An outcome that didn't surprise you.
Well,
Heat.
Yeah.
Heat Bobcats.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd have to agree.
I wish Big Al wouldn't have gotten hurt.
And that hurt him.
Yeah.
It did. But, again, a four-game sweep from the back-to-back NBA champions, it was kind of expected. If you allow me, I'm going to lament a little bit about Toronto and the fact that we weren't surprised by the Nets beating them, or at least I wasn't surprised, more so sad, just because you look at how young Toronto is. To win a series, I say it probably ad nauseum, but you have to know how to win, which seems so stupid. But you have to understand how to finish games, and you have to understand you've been there before and you've done it enough times where you don't lose yourself, so to speak, in the moment. You know, Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett have been in those situations several times. They know how to play, how to stay grounded, and how to make plays towards the end of the game. You look at that play at the end against Kyle Lowry.
Yeah.
Paul Pierce was not going to let him get a shot off and knew that the refs aren't going to call anything. It was borderline. More so, it was a block. Could have been called a foul if it was, say, in the third quarter. Guy gets knocked down. Refs maybe blow the whistle. But Paul Pierce, being a veteran, knows I can be aggressive in this moment, and I can go after this ball, and I can make sure this guy doesn't get a legitimate shot at the hoop, and did, and made the right play. Veterans versus the youth.
Yep.
And in a series that was very even throughout the regular season, those two teams played each other extremely close. In the end, the veterans are going to win. So I wasn't really surprised at that. And now for Toronto, you get hungry because they're young with DeMar DeRozan, Kyle Lowry, Terrence Ross, and they've got a bright future ahead of them, which is fun for me because now a team I've been cheering for my entire life, for as long as I can remember, finally has a legitimate shot.
Hope. Yeah.
So that was fun. Quickly, second round predictions. Wizards, Pacers, Clippers, Thunder. Those two play right now, tonight, what have you.
I'm going to go Pacers.
Okay.
And I don't feel great about it. And I am going to go, gosh, that LA, Oklahoma City, that seems destined to go seven.
It does, doesn't it?
I'm going to pick the home team. I'm going to go with whoever's got game seven at home, which in this case is Oklahoma
Thunder.
City.
Okay, so I like the Wizards.
Yep.
Honestly, in this one.
I figured you would.
And I do like the Thunder.
Yeah.
I think Kevin Durant got a little bit ticked off.
I love both of those two teams.
I do, too.
I really do. And I will watch every game of that series that I am able.
Better coach in Doc Rivers taking on a better superstar in Kevin Durant, I think, is what you're
coming
down to.
I would agree
to.
With that.
I think the whole Mr. Unreliable thing, which, by the way, why do you have to apologize for a headline? First off, the guy who wrote the story didn't write the headline. That wasn't his thing.
Yeah.
It's a copy editor, I think, is who made that up, which he probably was on a deadline or needed to come up with something that was going to grab attention and said he calls him unreliable at a certain point in this article. Yeah, Mr. Unreliable, let's put that. It's a little bit of a shock value type of thing, but you don't need to apologize for it. And that's what they did. The paper apologized. For what? Because people got upset?
Yeah.
So be it.
Yeah, it's
kind
of
stupid. The whole thing was stupid, is what I said.
Okay.
The guy can have an opinion, but it's over a headline. Get
true.
Over it.
Yeah. It's kind of the whole getting back to where you want to cover a team that has, or a team in a town that's just, they're the show in town.
Right.
That's kind of, there's a reason why you wouldn't see a headline like that coming from Jeff Kolpak.
Oh, right.
You don't bite that hand.
No.
And I think that's why you put out the apology more so than anything else.
And I get that, but it's still, yeah, it rubbed me the wrong way because I just felt like these people were kind of going, oh, sorry, didn't mean to write that, which you wrote in the article, essentially, that he's just not been reliable for the series.
Which,
to call him Mr.
How you write that about Durant and not
sometimes,
Westbrook?
Sometimes he was a columnist.
Okay,
he wrote what he had to
enough.
Do. He filled the space, and so be it. Nets Heat, I think the Heat win this in five or six. I truly believe that. And Trailblazers Spurs, again, veteran over youth. It's going to be a classic series that way. I think the Spurs win that as well. I think we're destined for another Spurs Heat finals.
It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, it's the Heat are going. The Heat. I mean, now after the implosion of Indiana,
yeah.
It really.
I think we're clear here. What?
Yeah.
Where the Heat are going to go? Yeah. It's the West that's we don't know. And I think Scott Brooks really showed his hand against the Grizzlies, and really wish Zach Randolph could have played Game 7.
Yeah.
And be that as it may, he didn't.
Yeah, you punch somebody, that pretty much takes care of it.
Right. And again, people can argue that, well, it wasn't a punch, and I can't believe they called, but you put it in their hands.
Yeah,
you put it in
sure
the NBA's hands.
Looked like a punch.
Well, no, I mean, it was, but maybe it's the penalty for the punch that people felt was harsh. But again, you put it in other people's hands.
Yep.
You let them determine what it was.
You're better than that.
Yeah, you are better than that. So, Spurs, Heat, I think you would agree.
Yeah, I think I have to.
Okay. Moving on again, more NFL draft talk. I get a little bit kind of oversaturated with this stuff because it's all over for like months. You know, draft this, draft that, draft here. I don't want to go through all 32 picks because it would just become mundane.
Oh, yeah, that would be bad.
Let's just say we're picking the top five. Who goes to what team?
Yeah, I mean, in general, I kind of go, you know, I'm going to kind of go on the experts a little bit.
I rely heavily on experts.
If they say Clowney is one, I think Clowney's one.
I think so too.
I don't know that I agree with it, but I think he's number one. Greg Robinson is off as offensive tackle du jour. I'm going to go Sammy Watkins though. I think receivers are such a buzz right now, and you've had a little bit of a run where top receivers have done okay, have turned out decent, and I think that starts to push people up. So I'm going to go Sammy Watkins 2.
Okay.
This massive tackle from Auburn 3, Robinson.
Okay.
I think Manziel goes 4.
Right.
And the Raiders, I think they go Khalil Mack, even though the Rolando McClain hasn't worked out really at all.
Right.
That whole...
I understand.
That hasn't worked, so I think they... I think that's about where he goes.
I think that you and I can both agree that Clowney's going to go to Houston. In St. Louis, the receiver bit, if I remember right, they got somebody last year, and I can't remember his name.
Tavon Austin.
Yes. And so I think, and he's more, I mean, he did a lot for him, and he showed some skill last year.
He showed flashes. He's a Devin Hester-ish type.
And we'll see, because it's very early on in his career to peg him as such.
True.
Maybe right now he is, but maybe he can
blossom. Yeah, you hope and he turns into Santana Moss is kind of his upside.
And so that's why I think they're going to go offensive tackle to Greg Robinson. The Jaguars are a different monster completely, because now it's, well, what do I do? And I think that Gus Bradley and all his wisdom will take Billy Turner with the number 3 pick. Kidding. I think he'll go defense. He's a defensive guy.
You got Khalil Mack?
Yeah, I think he'll go Khalil Mack, and I think that's going to help him, and he's going to try to do that route. Go defense first, and then we'll build the offense a different way or maybe in next year's draft. The Browns and the Raiders, to me, oh boy, those two are so interesting.
Yeah,
they're wild cards because at this point in my mock draft, Blake Bortles and Johnny Manziel are both still available.
Yes.
And Cleveland has more talent than Oakland, but they have a really big hole at the quarterback position, as does Oakland. I understand that. But
so, come on.
I see
Let's have it. Let's
Cleveland
have it.
Taking Blake Bortles at 4.
And the Raiders, you don't think they can pass? The ghost of Al Davis can't pass up Johnny Manziel?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I really don't. And that would leave Atlanta with an opportunity at Sammy Watkins or Tampa Bay, which both would go, I really could use one of those two guys. Atlanta couldn't, but how do you pass him up?
Yeah.
I mean, that would be tough to pass up a guy with his kind of skill. So that's how I see it going down. I think Manziel 5, Bortles, Mack, Robinson, Clowney.
Okay.
So that'll take care of our NFL draft. Now, to probably do this because You've been waiting for this all podcast, but I'm going to play this sound right here.
Wrong, 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 wrong.
Found an article as I was doing some research. The amount of money that schools make via football, even because of the conference they go in, it's pretty astronomical.
Staggering.
Yeah. So I was wrong. Vehemently wrong.
Yeah,
as vehemently loud, as I thought I was right.
As
vehemently
they like to
wrong.
Say on PTI, loud wrong.
Yeah, that's a loud
you
wrong.
Did, I tell you what, you had the passion behind it. You really did.
Yeah, I kind of forgot about a school named Texas and the fact that they have their own television station purely on the fact that they can sell football.
Yeah.
And there is a ton of money behind that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... Yeah. I was wrong, and I know Texas is a different situation. I was arguing for the sake of Syracuse, but when I looked at and saw how much schools are getting via moving to different conferences, you know, the ACC and the Big Ten are almost like neck and neck when it comes to distribution of money, and the Big Ten has its own network. There's just so much money when it comes to football. It's just, it's insane.
It takes a big man to admit that.
Yeah, I was dead wrong.
Yeah.
Loud wrong. So we'll take it from there, and we'll segue into Marcus from Mayville and his comment on our podcast page at KFGO.com. Marcus says, you guys need to do a segment for the White Shadow called That's It, That's the List. It's turned into his catchphrase.
I didn't realize it was turning into a catchphrase.
No, but that, I mean, when you get fired up, that's it and that's the list. I like it.
Okay,
I do. So we may have to look into that a little bit more.
I like it.
He transfers into the NBA draft. He goes, I've been reading up on some of that stuff, and the notion the draft is being rigged was brought up again. Do you guys buy into that at all? And if you do, do you think since the top three or the top of the draft is so loaded, the Lakers, Knicks, and Celtics didn't make the playoffs, last time this happened was 1949, that they get quote-unquote lucky and land picks in the top three?
Wouldn't that be great?
Oh, boy.
Oh, man. I know
people would be going crazy if those three teams are the top three picks.
Yeah, here's the thing. I love the whole frozen envelope. Was the Patrick Ewing the first ever draft lottery that they froze the New York Knicks envelope so that when Commissioner Stern reached in to pull out an envelope, he knew which one was the Knicks.
Right.
Love it. I think that's fantastic. Probably inaccurate. Find it really hard to believe, but those things are a ton of fun to read about. I don't believe so, although I've never understood why, as a part of this whole draft lottery reveal that they have, is that not televised? Why don't you have like the big lotto machine with all the lotto balls with team logos on it? And then when it's time to see who's got the first pick, and have it, you know, shoot up through the thing and roll down the...
I thought at one point they did.
That would be and they don't anymore. And maybe they did at one point, but I don't understand why you don't show that.
Right.
My gosh, that is fantastic TV. You put the camera, have cameras on all the different GMs so that you can see, or all the different people that are there so that you can see reactions. That's gold right there.
Gold, Jerry.
Gold.
And... I don't buy into the rig thing either, but if the top three teams are L.A., Boston, and the Knicks, presumably your biggest three teams in the NBA, you're looking at people just going crazy about, oh, it's rigged.
Now, here's the question. Over. If that happens, who gets blamed? Adam Silver, or does David Stern still somehow get blamed?
Donald Sterling. They'll throw it at him
Donald
somehow.
Donald Sterling?
Yeah. Somehow they'll blame him for all of it.
Oh, jeez.
It's
didn't
a
know
joke.
How you, okay.
It's a joke.
Yeah,
I'm not trying to make any kind of roundabout explanation to it. I honestly think it's going to be a Donald. Donald. I'm still on Sterling.
I was going to say, how about David Stern?
David Stern and Silver were in cahoots somehow, and they made this thing work.
Because people like Adam Silver.
Yes, especially after the way he handled the Sterling situation. Here's how it looks. When you're looking at teams and they go by position, right? So if you didn't make the playoffs,
so that's weights, depending on where your record is, that weights you the percentage. They lottery the top three, and then everyone else goes in order of record, worst to best.
Okay, so you're looking at Boston having the tied for fourth worst record in the NBA with Utah. The Lakers are just behind them. New York falls well behind all those teams. Sacramento, Detroit, Cleveland, New Orleans, and Denver, all between the Knicks, Lakers, and Boston. And then your top three are Milwaukee, Philadelphia, and Orlando. Definitely not hotbeds of basketball, specifically Milwaukee and Orlando. I would argue when Philly gets a superstar, they can just about tear the roof off a building.
Yeah.
A la AI. You know, if somehow those three teams do get the top three picks, then yes, I seriously would consider it being a rigged draft, especially with where the Knicks are at. I don't see it happening. I think the Lakers will get a top three pick. The Lakers or the Celtics will get a top three pick.
And you know that if any of those three do, the conspiracy theorists are going to be out there. And at some point, there's just so many historic franchises that have crappy records this year that it's probably going to happen to at least one of them.
But in the end, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't, because just because you get a pick,
you got to make the right pick.
I mean, that's the thing. I was thinking about this today, that how much pressure was put on LeBron James from the age of 16, and he's come through.
Yeah.
That never happens.
You got to have the right guy. I mean, I wouldn't say never
happens.
It's
rare, though.
Because you've got...
You think of football,
But let's just stick with basketball.
Okay, you think of basketball,
then. I mean, you know, you're looking at, in recent memory, your number one picks. Anthony Bennett obviously just has been bad, but everyone kind of knew this was a bad draft going in. I mean, you've got John Wall. You've got Kyrie Irving. You're going to have to help me out with some of the other guys. Anthony Davis.
All right,
I mean,
here we go.
You've got the list is not as bust heavy recently.
Recently, no. I think,
and even overall, NBA is probably your best bet. You'll have your Michael Olowokandis sprinkled in there, but very few.
Greg Odens,
yeah. You have very few of these guys that are just out and out bust, like some of these football busts where you're a bust and you're not useful. Andrew Bogut is not a superstar. He's not going to be a Hall of Famer, but he's been a good player in the league for quite a while.
So you look at this and you go, all right, since, let's say, 1996 or 97, because the number one pick is
so
still 90, in the league in 97.
97 was Duncan.
Yep. And then
98
County,
was Ivers. Oh, 98 was Ola Candy.
Candy, pardon me.
The Candy Man.
Elton Brand was in 99.
Kenyon Martin was
2000. Kwame Brown was 01.
Whoops.
Yao Ming was 02.
Okay, and he was, you know, multiple-time All-Star.
LeBron James was 03, and we know about that one. Dwight Howard was 04.
Okay.
Very good.
Yep.
Andrew Bogut's had a solid career.
Bargnani, I think, was 06.
He was, and he's been awful.
Not good.
Greg Oden's been hurt.
Yep.
Derrick Rose has been hurt.
But has an MVP.
Blake Griffin.
Yep.
John Wall, Kyrie Irving, Anthony Davis, Anthony Bennett.
Not a lot of whiffs in there. You got Bargnani, who was useful for a couple of years, but yeah, I would consider him a whiff. You got Kwame Brown. You've got Anthony Bennett, although, you know, again, 1 year, the jury's still out on whether at least he can be a semi-productive guy. But that's it. Everyone else has been either a superstar or pretty good.
I think the greatest draft ever was probably 2003.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you got D-Wade, Bosh, Carmelo, LeBron.
Let's see. All in the top four, along with...
Nah, not in the top four. Darko was number two that year.
Or top five, I should say. But yeah, that was how that went. You know, James, Anthony, Bosh, Wade. It was so top-heavy. I think that's how they view this draft going. Is
Wiggins, Parker, Embiid.
Yep. Randall.
Yep.
From
yep.
Kentucky. They view it that way. Guys who were drafted...
Exum.
In those later rounds, Chris Kaman, Kirk Heinrich...
we can talk
Nick
about
Collison.
Depth. And,
I mean, but. Yeah, we could go there. To me, though, it's all about do you pick right? Because in that little nugget in how good that 03 draft was Darko.
Yeah.
This guy who was supposed to be really good, you know? And by the way, the Pistons, who had an unbelievable...
Won the championship the next year.
Right.
Yep.
Were the number two pick via trade, and I understand that, but they were the number two pick. So they could have had an opportunity to continue success for years had they gone Carmelo, Dwayne, Bosh.
D-Wade, maybe.
Bosh would have fit in real well with that team in the sense they would have had a power forward off the bench who could stretch the floor a little bit and add offense to that defensive juggernaut of a team the Pistons had.
Yeah.
That, to me, is you look at it and you go, they had an opportunity. They screwed it up based on, well, we won't need anybody for
a while. Well, sure, they obviously screwed it up because they picked one of the more memorable draft busts ever.
And again, it gets back to the final point that regardless of if this thing is rigged or not,
you got to have the right guy.
You got to have the right guy in the right situation. So again, you never know. So that's going to wrap it up for us.
It is.
The 041 podcast has come to a conclusion. A future note here.
Yeah.
We're going to have one more podcast, and then Brad jets off to Europe, I believe.
That's factual.
For about 10 days or so.
Yep.
And he'll come back as white as ever.
Yes, that'll happen.
There will be no tanning in Europe.
No.
But if you want
to... Will be a lot of Speedo, though.
Oh, boy, don't tell me that. I don't want to... That's bad. You don't have to get into... You don't have to immerse yourself completely in the culture.
I don't.
You can ignore that part of it.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, if you want to contact us, make sure and leave a comment on the comment section on kfgo.com or send us an email to pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com.
Sometime next week, we're not sure what day, because now Pinto and I, our athletic careers get going.
Yeah, we start
softball.
Up. We still have the basketball one-on-one NBA.
We're thinking around the NBA finals.
Yeah, around the finals.
Is when we're going to be doing that.
So we'll be doing that coming up in future shows. And a lot of other things coming on. So, again, follow us on Twitter. I'm at PintoKFGO. Brad Jones is.
At the Bison Guy.
Get us on iTunes, the Pinto and White Shadow Show. And just find us out there. Tell a friend. Tell a coworker. Tell a buddy. We're out there. We're willing to talk. If you send us a topic, we'll discuss it. And we might discuss it at length. And I might say some really idiotic things about it. So, for Brad Jones, I'm Dale Garson. Thank you so much for listening to the 041 Podcast. And we'll see you next time.